I have the very difficult task of trying to fit in three countries into one presentation. So I've been given Zimbabwe, Zambia, and Egypt. Right? Each one of those could easily take up the 1 hour slot. So I will try and move quite quickly. And at the end of each country, I will open up just for a few minutes for any burning questions that you might have. And then right at the end, you can go into some more Q&A if you like. So firstly, Zimbabwe. When I speak about Zimbabwe, I like to open up with this quotation from Operation World. Operation World is like the missionary book. It tells you about every country in the world. It tells you about the religious and political situation there and how you can effectively pray for the people there. It's on our shelf if anybody is looking for it, and it will be very helpful for some of your assignments. It's a little something I thought I would slide to you. Operation World says, Zimbabwe's desperate situation would be farcical were it not so tragic. Suffering has reached unprecedented levels. And that is certainly true. Zimbabwe has had an incredible amount of suffering, especially over the past 30 years. Although Zimbabwe often is thought of as a place of suffering and crime and violence and poverty and all kinds of things, it's a very beautiful place. It shares the Victoria Falls with Zambia. In fact, the view of Victoria Falls from Zimbabwe is better than the view of Victoria Falls from Zambia. Also, just a little piece of information if you ever want to go and visit. Driving through Zimbabwe, you'll see vast landscapes. Some of it once farmland, but now just nothing really that's happening there. You all know of the situation in Zimbabwe. I don't need to go too much into the historical background because you already received the presentation on Zimbabwe and Mugabe while you were at the camp. But just so you know that Zimbabwe had hyperinflation upwards of 80 billion percent, and that which has second highest inflation in world history. All of this money is basically worthless. There it says, this is the equivalent of $1,000. That's when the picture was taken. Obviously today this money has no value except for the tourism value that it has, yes. It was one of those communists next to Russia. I forget now. I'll tell you. Second, I can't remember the name of it. It's a European country, communist. Gone out of my head. Anyway, doesn't matter. Zimbabwe is what's important. These are signs that you will find in Zimbabwe. Toilet paper only to be used in this toilet. No cardboard, no cloth, no Zim dollar, no newspaper. Right? That's because of how useless the Zimbabwe dollar is. Yeah. I mean, this is funny, but it's real. Right? There are a few things missing from this shop from 2008. Unemployment reached 90%, and even those who had jobs are not guaranteed paychecks. We've met many people, teachers, all kinds of people who have not been paid in months and months, but they just go to work anyway. Teachers who have not... Would you go to work if you weren't paid for 3 months? Or maybe you would, I don't know. But I mean, it's tough. It's tough, very tough. Because of the inflation, Zimbabwe adopted the US dollar. This is one of the US dollars that we use. And I took a picture of that. I was with an American at the time, and he was so disgusted at how soiled this US dollar looked. But this is how they all look. It's disgusting. You feel dirty after you handle the money. There was a crisis a while ago with street vendors. These were two men that I shared the gospel with. They were very funny guys. They were both drunkards. They weren't drunk when I was speaking to them, but they were trying to find all kinds of excuses for drunkenness. Jesus said it's not what goes in your mouth, but it's what comes out of your mouth that defiles you. So, we should be able to drink alcohol. I mean, just all those kinds of strange arguments. Right, well. These are street vendors that were all across the whole country because Grace Mugabe had said that the street vendors should be allowed to go wherever they want to. And so you can imagine the chaos. You have a pick and pay. So people are going to pick and pay for groceries, fruits, vegetables, maybe some meat or whatever. And so you have all these vendors that set up shop outside of Pick and Pay selling fruits, vegetables, meat, and all that kind of thing on the street for much lower price, because they don't have to pay for building costs and staff and all that kind of thing. And so businesses just started to crash and plummet all over the place. And it's just, these are the kinds of tactics that the communist government likes to play with the people. They do things like this to make it seem like they are helping the people and lifting them up. And they'll even do things that might seem not communist, that might seem capitalist. But they have no problem with that. They have no problem acting out of character or acting in a way that, you know, a manner that they don't really believe in, because that's communism. You have to keep people confused. You have to keep lying to them. You can't let them understand who you are and how you operate. Very important, because that's how you brainwash people on a mass level. How many of you have ever heard of Pavlov's dogs? All right. So the classic experiment: you give a dog food, he salivates. You give a dog food and ring the bell at the same time. Eventually, he associates the bell, like Carl does at KFC, with food. All right. You hear the bell, you know there's food coming. Eventually, you can just ring the bell and the dog will start to salivate because he thinks it's food time. Now, not a lot of people know this, but when Pavlov was doing his experiments, there was a flood in his lab, and the dogs had to tread water for, it was like 2 or 3 days or something like that. They were starved. They were tired, exhausted, and he found that these dogs were just completely out of character. They had no personality. You know, dogs have their own personality. These dogs had no personality anymore. They were depressed. They were strange. They just were not responsive to anything. And he found that he could then train these dogs almost to have a new personality. Okay, so these experiments were then taken from Pavlov and applied to humans. And that's how they brainwash people, when they capture them prisoners of war, and they can actually turn a prisoner of war into loving their captors. They were once hating the people, but now they're loving them, because, yeah, they keep the people confused, they keep them starved, and they keep them tired. All of those three are essential in brainwashing a person, and you can almost reshape the person's thinking. And so people have applied this to, on a grand political scale. And that's why the government of Zimbabwe wants its people to suffer. They want their people to suffer. They want their people to be confused. They want to lie to their people, because that's how they brainwash them, and that's how they keep them confused. Estimates suggest that 25 to 50% of the population has fled the country. I think it's a much higher number than that. Mm-hmm. But this is just an estimate. I think more than half the people of Zimbabwe have fled the country. Healthcare has been in a desperate meltdown. Power failures, lack of supplies, and inability to pay workers, etc., etc. We know what it's like to have power failures in South Africa, meaning all of a sudden there's no electricity. In Zimbabwe, they have power failures for 8 hours at a time, very often. They have water cuts very often. So we have really nothing to complain about here in comparison to Zimbabwe. In 2008, more than 100,000 people were infected with cholera. Over 2,000 people are dying from AIDS every week, and there are around 1 million AIDS orphans. The Mugabe-endorsed seizure of over 5,500 white-owned farms allowed over 100,000 war veterans to settle in over 10 million hectares. And that farm, those farmlands, you can be sure, are not actually being used for farming. Thousands of people are now squatting on what was once fertile farmland. This violent revolutionary land redistribution also took the lives of over two-thirds of the country's wildlife. And I think it's even higher than that. Here you see an elephant that has been killed. Mugabe's people, when they started taking over, were killing animals all over the place. They had soldiers going into game reserves, just shooting them down, digging pits so that the animals could fall into. That, coupled with the incredible unemployment and starvation, led to people eating a lot of animals as well. I remember sitting in the garden of a certain individual, and the birds were chirping in the trees, and he said to me, a few years ago you wouldn't have even heard the birds chirping in the trees because people were just eating whatever they could find. How bad it was. Incredible violence, and you know how the story goes. Mugabe said, what annoys us is when our own indigenous farmers sublease to the very same white farmers we took our heritage from yesterday. This was in 2014. A lot of people were hiring the farmers who used to own the farms so that they could come back and run the farms, and Mugabe said, no, none of that at all. And it is actually not a black versus white thing in Zimbabwe. It was a tribal thing, and just a thing of hatred. Not only were white people targeted when Mugabe took over, the Matabele people, thousands and thousands of them were killed, slaughtered, bayoneted, thrown into mass graves and just buried over. There are a number of theological seminaries, but funding is scarce. The church is under threat by a rapid increase of traditional African practices. This is a particular seminary that I did a series of lectures in. And this is some of the worst ministry I have ever done in all my life.
Why?
Good question.
You wanted us to ask
that. I was going to tell you anyway, but the dramatic pause works. Okay. When I went there, they were late for every presentation. Secondly, you said it, not me. Secondly, they had these terrible attitudes. Every presentation, every lecture that I did, they intentionally asked provocative and controversial questions that had nothing to do with the topic I was speaking about. I did a discernment seminar over there, and I had some of the worst responses I've ever had. These guys were angry with me. They were very angry with me. You're telling us Benny Hinn is bad. Miles Monroe is bad. Joyce Meyer. You're telling us all these people are bad. Who are we supposed to follow then? It says a lot about you if you have to ask that kind of question. Who are we supposed to follow? I was scratching their idols. That's why they were upset. And there were many other reasons as well. And it made me so despondent to think that these were the future pastors of Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe has faced numerous elections with no shortage of fraud, intimidation, violence, and destruction of property. State-endorsed violence and even murder and frequent human rights violations target members of non-ZANU-PF parties, the media, and social activists. During election time, this is what you will see, police and military personnel going into villages, just beating people, burning down villages to intimidate them, just as part of the brainwashing, to get them to vote for ZANU-PF, the current political ruling party. Fraud is also prevalent during elections. You have thousands of people who are voting, apparently, who are over the age of 100. Very unlikely. All right? In other words, they're taking dead people and making them vote. In fact, that was a big problem in the previous election. That, wait a second, a lot of these people are dead. How could they have voted? Well, you know, these things happen. Sadly, the Mugabe did not have really much opposition until recently, and I'll get into that a little bit later. Does anybody know who this is? Morgan Tsvangirai. Very, very popular opposition to Mugabe. His political party defeated ZANU-PF, which is Mugabe's party, back in 2009. He decided that he would share power with Mugabe, and then eventually that led to Mugabe just taking all the power back again. So he won using the democratic process, but it didn't actually work out. And Tsvangirai still praises Mugabe for liberating the people of Zimbabwe and helping them out of colonial oppression and giving his people great peace and all that kind of thing. So he's not actually willing to recognize the sins of Mugabe. And this is such a big problem that I struggle to get lots of Zimbabweans to understand. They think Mugabe is the problem, which is what they think right now, which is what led to the revolution, which is what they call it. Mugabe is not the problem. He's not. He is part of a much greater worldview problem that has infected the entire country. What do you have now? You have ZANU-PF members running the country who kicked Mugabe out. The same people who were with Mugabe when he was doing all of his acts of violence, committing acts of fraud, stealing from the people, these people are not being brought to justice. They are now running the country and people are celebrating because they think the big problem is Mugabe. That's all we have to focus on. Not true. It's a much greater worldview problem. There are many people with a lot of money in Zimbabwe despite the immense poverty. Kathy Buckle is somebody who lives in Zimbabwe and she writes many reports. She wrote, "The first big scandal came before Christmas when we heard that the CEO of ZBC, Zimbabwe Broadcasting, was earning $40,000 a month at a time when civil servants such as teachers are earning around $500 a month, and they weren't even getting paid every month. Right? They were only getting paid maybe once every 3 or 4 months. Turns out that Mr. Dube, the CEO of Premier Services Medical Aid Society, has been earning a basic salary of $230,000, while 13 other members of their senior management had been getting $870,000 between them every month. This comes at a time when fee-paying members of this medical aid scheme are having to pay cash for x-ray scans, blood tests, and other services because their medical aid cards are being rejected for amounts as little as $40. So, you have this country that has incredible corruption on a political scale, a lot of poverty, sickness, a lot of bad things going for them. You take this kind of country and you introduce religion to it. What do you get? Every kind of religion, cult, and sect out of there flourishing because they're all promising the people a better way of life. Just join us and things are going to start going well for you. You'll get Hindus, you'll get Muslims, the ZZC, the ZCC, the Zion Apostolic Church, Zion Apostolic Faith Church, and all the different branches of Zion or Apostolic Church, which is just often a very syncretistic kind of church. This is they call this a mountain, it's just a big rock in Harare, and you see this square? People line up for weeks to kneel inside of the square to pray because they believe when they pray inside of the square, they will receive blessings from heaven. You'll see why in just a moment. Here are some women who are praying on the same rock. This little girl has autism, and they've been praying for her. And every once in a while they're praying for her, they go and they pour some of this water. This is water that has been blessed by a priest, which they had to purchase for money, and they believe that this water has healing properties in it. The reason they think this mountain is so powerful is because of this. Does that look like anything? Kind of like a footprint, right? They believe that's the footprint of God because he walked on this mountain. When we buy airtime here in South Africa, we just go to the shop and they print out a little slip for us. When you buy airtime in Zimbabwe, you buy this card. And on the back of the card, you scratch out a number and you put that into your phone. So this is really the major cellular network provider in Zimbabwe. There's two others, but this is the main one. See this over here? This is on the back of every single one of these cards that you buy. If you ask anything in my name, I will do it. John chapter 14, verse 14. Now that sounds nice, they're putting scripture verses on the back of these cards. However, this says a lot about the religious situation in Zimbabwe. All the different religions are promising people health, wealth, and prosperity if they will come to them, including churches. And so you travel around Zimbabwe, you see no end of this. Miss Vingo Miracle Crusade. Hubert Angel, you know who this is? One of the biggest false prophets in Africa. He lost a lot of popularity when he developed brain cancer. I don't celebrate that, but he's somebody who promises health to everybody, and well, he didn't exactly have it himself. And this is the kind of thing that he promotes. This is one of his banners. one of these posters, become a money magnet, Women Unlimited, it's your time. So, driving around in very expensive automobiles. This is Makandiwa, some of you may have heard of him. He's another very big false prophet in Zimbabwe. And Makandiwa, Makandiwa does a lot of strange miracles, like pregnancy miracles, where people come to his services and they actually get pregnant. I mean, like, miraculously, there's all of a sudden a baby in the stomach. Yeah, I know, a lot of questions automatically go up in my mind too. Then there's money miracles. You come to his services and all of a sudden money will appear in your bank account, miraculously. So, I mean, which begs the question, where did the money come from? You know, did God just create money? Is he messing with our financial systems? Or did he take it from somewhere else? It's very, very concerning. These are the kinds of meetings that he pulls out weekly. Yes. Now, it's very difficult for a man like this to pastor all of these people. I don't think he is a real biblical pastor, but very difficult for him to pastor all of them. This is from his website. I took this myself. You see up here, it says, UFI Ministries will provide a platform for current and prospective partners to continue towards the strategic development of the Ministry of UFI. Ministry of USI allows partners to collectively participate financially and materially in social support programs carried out by this ministry. Partners will enjoy special conferences with Pastor Makandiwa and the opportunity to interact with the man of God based on their level of contribution. And here are the levels of contribution that you can have monthly. Silver partner, $20. Gold partner, 100. Platinum, 500. Star partner, $1,000 a month. In a place where there is an unemployment of upwards 90%. If you are a star partner, you get to have Prophet Makandiwa's cell phone number, and you can even go and visit the man of God. The latest and greatest, hottest prophet in Zimbabwe now is Magaya, Prophet Magaya, and he does things like house miracles. If you come and you donate 2 bricks to him, God will bless you with a house. It's very interesting that not too long after that, he had enough bricks to build his own palace. You'll see these kinds of things, anointing oil, which you can buy, anointed mantle, this is from his website. These badges or these bracelets, these things that say be fruitful and multiply. You can show that it has nothing to do with the dominion mandate you find in Genesis. It's about be fruitful and multiply and basically just get more money on this earth. And this guy, by the way, was anointed and appointed by TB Joshua. Now, he had gone and done a lot of ministry in Zimbabwe, in places where people are poor and neglected, and a lot of others are not willing to go, often preaching by candlelight because there is no electricity, preaching out in the open air. So this is next to a train track where some people just lived next to the train tracks. They're just living there. This was an outdoor marketplace. You can almost, can't really see it in this picture, but someone actually was still selling tomatoes in the front there. I think that, is that? Yeah, there's something there. So what happened here was, we started showing the Jesus film, and it started to rain. And everybody who was walking past just ran under the shelter, and so they were stuck there, and they were all listening. And it was quite interesting. At the end, I stood up and started preaching to everyone. And I made an invitation. I said, anybody who wants to come and publicly call upon the Lord, you can do that. I don't often do that. But while I was preaching, there were a whole lot of young men there in the back who were busy mocking me and shouting at me. And as I was getting louder, they were getting louder. And I was getting louder, and they were getting louder. And it was a competition to see who was the loudest. And I said, who's going to make a public stand for Christ right here, right now, despite what these people are saying and despite what anybody thinks about you? Who wants to come forward and say, I will serve Christ? About 10 or 15 people came forward and made public declaration, I want to serve Christ no matter what anybody says. This was another interesting opportunity. We were showing the Jesus film in this marketplace against the side of our Land Rover. As we started showing the Jesus film, there was a party that was happening just right next to us. And as we started, they got louder, and we got louder, and they got louder. And you know, some of these speakers, you know, that these guys have for their parties are just too loud. I mean, nobody can compete. I don't know where they get these things from, but they are loud, and the bass is heavy. Yeah, this is in Zimbabwe. And we couldn't compete. People couldn't hear the Jesus film. And, you know, it was like not even a minute into the film, all of a sudden there was a power failure. But we had a generator. So the party stopped, and we were the biggest party in town, and we had like 500 people come and watch the Jesus film up against the side of our Land Rover, which was fantastic. Yeah, it was very funny. We don't always pray for people, but you know, sometimes they do come and they want to get prayed for, and so we do, and we encourage them to call upon the Lord. We've had opportunities to train leaders and chaplains and people from all different denominational backgrounds, taking them books, commentaries. This is a commentary on the book of Acts in their own language. World Missionary Press gospel booklet. Here's a chaplain that we spoke with. We were able to run a 3-day chaplain conference with military, prison, and police chaplains from all over the country. Some of the top-ranking chaplains came, which is a very big deal, because we're talking about military personnel. Whenever there's a gathering of military personnel, Mugabe gets very sensitive about it. In all the years that we've been doing ministry in Zimbabwe, well, that I've been doing ministry in Zimbabwe, which is about 7 years now, it's the only time we've ever been able to get chaplains to come together. And we had all the top-ranking chaplains for 3 days. We could just encourage them and share the word with them. We also teach people how to witness. Our conferences and seminars with churches usually are not very big at all. Sometimes just a few people. Sometimes it's just like three little old women who don't understand any English who are sitting in the back of the church, and you know, you time for you to start the conference. And then as you start, they all fall asleep. So sometimes that happens. We also do a lot of one-on-one witnessing. Now, this is not the guy's hair. This is just a tree in the background. There are a lot of one-on-one evangelism, which you find to be very effective.
I thought it was
Well, open-air preaching and public ministry like that is helpful. The best, I feel, is one-on-one evangelism. Because then you can really minister to the person and really help them understand what the gospel is. Sometimes you spend like an hour just speaking with one person, but at the end of that hour, that person knows the way of salvation. This is Aubrey. He was sharing his testimony with the students. Do you all know Aubrey's testimony?
No.
Maybe I shouldn't say anything then. Okay, but it's very powerful. Just believe me, it's very powerful. Sometimes we go into the rural areas, which is what I actually prefer doing. I don't like cities. I don't like cities around Africa. I can't stand Harare. Send me to Zambia. I hate Lusaka. If I can do anything to avoid going to Lusaka, I will do it. I can't stand these places. They're busy. It's like Cape Town City, but much bigger, much more busy, and just, oh, it's terrible. Sorry? The people. Firstly, the people are different. You go to the villages, the people are humble, they're kind, they're hospitable. In the villages, in the main cities, everybody's just got an attitude. Everybody has a sense of entitlement, and it's busy, incredibly busy, overpopulated. Everywhere. Everywhere. All the major cities around Africa. I don't know really any that are not like this. This is a place in Zimbabwe which is called Takavarasha, which means the place where they throw away dead things. And we did a lot of ministry over here with a particular pastor who's doing a fantastic work. He's a pastor of the church, he's a science teacher in the local high school, and he teaches these people agriculture as well. So over here, he asked us, please will you speak to our young people, because the young men here are very lazy. They don't want to work hard. He said, you need to speak. He said, you need to teach them to work hard so that they can shame poverty. And so we did. We spoke about poverty, its causes and its cure. And all these people were sitting there. And at the end, some of the young men came up and they said, you know what these people have been saying is true. Now this is a place where there's incredible poverty and unemployment. They said, we are poor because we are lazy. We make poor women do all the work while the men sit around and get drunk. That's the truth. They got money to get alcohol, but not to plant seed and grow crops. It is our fault that we are in the state that we are in. And he was challenging, this is a young man, and he was challenging all the other men in his community, and there were many other responses just like that. This is some of the propaganda that you will find. This is just a glass. Mugabe is apparently keeping you healthy and warm. Discernment is a major issue in Zimbabwe. And a lot of people have started to ask me to do discernment seminars with them because of the amount of false teachers and false prophets that are there. And I was speaking to this particular church. It's the same church where this happened. Speaking about discernment just with the leaders, and at the end one of the women came forward and said to me and said to everyone, now I know that someone does not need to beat us and take money from us in order to be a true prophet of God. Thank you for teaching that to me. Now that seems strange, but that's the kind of response that you get, because that's exactly what happens on a grand scale throughout Zimbabwe. People getting beaten, people getting abused, people getting stolen from by these supposed men of God. Another man came up to me and he said, a while ago, many years ago, he said, please will you come and run a discernment seminar with my church, because people are very caught up with strange practices. And he was telling me stories about how some people are summoning snakes to lick people's wounds so that they will get healed. And all very strange stories that just creep you out. Whether they're true or not, I don't know. So I did. All I did was I preached through 1 Corinthians. I did a sermon on the book of 1 Corinthians. And I was just drawing out different themes from the book. And I warned them against false teachers and false prophets. And I said, and they're coming for you. They will come for you. And they will try and deceive you. And you must stand strong in the word. I didn't see this pastor for another 2 years. That was the last thing I ever preached there. I tried to arrange ministry with him. I tried to come back to him. He never communicated with me. I thought maybe I had offended him. I thought, well, maybe I said too much. I don't know. But 2 years later, I went back to him. He met with me and he said, I'm so sorry that I haven't been communicating with you. And he gave a whole long reason. He said, the last time you were here, you warned us about the false prophets. Just after you left, a few months down the line, one of the men from Congo came, because a lot of Congolese pastors that come in there. He started a church. He was promising people health and wealth and prosperity. And many churches around us shut down. Many churches lost up to half of their members. But I didn't lose a single person, because he warned us that this would happen beforehand. Another ministry that we do is Boxes with Love. You can imagine people who have gone through a lot of poverty, especially the old people who have had pensions based on a currency that no longer exists. Right? I know I met one lady who had sold her house so that she could retire, and shortly after that hyperinflation hit and her life savings were useless, worthless. So we pack these boxes with love as just a small form of relief aid, with lots of different essentials, some food, some literature, some gospel tracts, and all kinds of things. and we take them to some of these people. This is just one of the old age homes that we go to. We go to many different old age homes, different old people from different backgrounds, different different church denominations, different races. So we go to a lot of different people from different backgrounds and deliver these parcels, and they are incredibly grateful for us. A while ago there were some protests about Mugabe, and this is the kind of attitude that you see. Mugabe is starving his own people. Mugabe is a liar. Mugabe is war. A lot of people blaming Mugabe for what is going wrong in the country. And you had the hashtag this flag movement by this particular pastor, Marawira, I think is his name. And he became very popular, although he got kicked out of Zimbabwe eventually. And the people were really blaming Mugabe for the problems. And they still are blaming Mugabe for the problems. However, Mugabe, I don't think, is really the one to blame. It's more of a worldview issue than anything else. They've reinstated these bond notes, they say, that are equivalent to $1. But it's nothing. It's fake currency. It's useless. And I've tried to explain this to the Zimbabweans. I said, this is not a currency that is based on anything. It's a useless currency. You take this to any other country in the world, they will not trade with you in this currency. What are you telling us? Are you telling us that our money is not worth anything? Yes, that's exactly what I'm telling you. Your money is not worth anything. This is very bad that they are introducing this. They are trading with nothing. Just pieces of paper that's not based on anything. And eventually, this is what's going to be circulating in the market. And because they are a country that is dependent on imports, they will no longer be able to import anything because they don't have any real currency. Your currency needs to circulate within the country about 4 or 5 times before it gets exported if your country is to thrive and do well. But Zimbabwe is completely import dependent. There is no circulation of wealth because there is no farms, there is no industry, there are no real major factories. The biggest factory is a factory that produces beer. And then secondly, the biggest farming projects are the farming projects that produce tobacco. So both absolutely useless things. A lot of people have hope that Zimbabwe will get better now. This is a line that you will see during voting. And you can be sure that voting is not private. People are hoping for a better future for Zimbabwe. Right now, I don't know what the future of Zimbabwe holds. For years, people were asking me, who do you think is going to take over from Mugabe one day? I would always say, I don't know. It's completely unpredictable. And I don't think anybody saw this coming, what happened now. A lot of people saying, well, maybe it's Grace Mugabe, or maybe it's the vice president. We didn't know. This was very unpredictable, what happened now. I'm hoping that things will go better just for the people's sake. But to be honest with you, there is a huge worldview problem. And most of the people that put them in the problem they are in now are still in power. And that's just the reality. I really hope that it goes better for Zimbabwe, but reality seems to say something else. What is really needed is a spiritual revival. People need to come back to God, churches need to stop playing games, and people need to seek justice, have a desire for holiness and righteousness. And then I think you'll start to see some kind of change. A lot more can be said about that. Psalm chapter 10, verse 17. The Lord is King forever and ever. The nations perish from His land. O Lord, You hear the desire of the afflicted. You will strengthen their heart. You will incline Your ear to do justice to the fatherless and the oppressed, so that the man who is of the earth may strike terror no more. And that's our hope and prayer for Zimbabwe. Does anybody have questions before I move on to Zambia?
Yeah, you said in one slide that the pastor was doing like agriculture. When you go to some of these places, do you introduce them with like some ways how they can farm?
Yeah, so that's not really our speciality, but we do hook people up with different people who can help them, like farming God's way and things like that. And we've helped people with different kinds of things. But a lot of the people in the villages do know how to farm. They know how to do it. They just either lack the supplies or they lack the initiative. And so we try and help in those areas if we can. But they have to desire it. It has to come from them. And we have helped some of them, like with seed and things like that, where we can, and they have benefited from it. But in some places, that wouldn't really help. They would either eat the seed or just give it to their wives to go and plant. And, you know, their wife has 7 children she needs to look after, and she's the one who has to go and fetch water and do the fire and cook the food and do everything while the man sits around and does absolutely nothing all day. That's not going to help them. We need to really put fire under them and get them to get off the back end of their bodies and do something.
If you get them off the back end, then the farming goes away.
Yes, it is. It's very good. It's useful. And we try to put people in touch with some of those different projects and initiatives when we can. Yes, your bank will give you an allowance of how much money you're allowed to take. Okay? And all the businesses want to deal in cash, because once your money's in the bank, you can't really touch it. And so people will stand in queues all day long to try and draw $50, which is their allowance for the week. And sometimes they don't have that because the bank runs out. So they say, oh, well, only today we can only give you $10. And you know, that's an entire day of just standing in a line waiting to receive $10. You can't do that. I mean, you can't live like that. You have to work. You have to do things. And so you have people who are professional queue waiters. You know, you pay them so much and they'll stand in the queue for you all day long. So that you can draw, that they can draw money on your behalf. It's ridiculous. So you can imagine how much productivity is now lost in the country because people are hindered from movement. And so, yeah, politics is important. Good. Any other burning questions about Zimbabwe? Sorry that I had to rush through that. So much that could be said. Okay. Zambia, one of the lands that David Livingstone went to, he said, I beg to direct your attention to Africa. I know that in a few years I shall be cut off in that country, which is now open. Do not let it be shut again. I go back to Africa to try and make an open path for commerce and Christianity. It is for you to carry out the work which I have begun. I leave it with you. During David Livingstone's life, in the 1850s, he explored Zambia, Angola, Zimbabwe, and Mozambique, traveling across South Central Africa from the Atlantic Ocean to the Indian Ocean, which is a lot of walking. He discovered Victoria Falls in 1855, at which point he measured the falls, which is accurate to this day, in 1800s. He's crawled up to the edge, and drop the plumb line to measure how far down it is. These measurements are accurate. The width that he measured of Victoria Falls is accurate. This is a sketch that was made, which is accurate. All these measurements, which David Livingstone, this is from his diary, all of it accurate. I mean, and that's incredible. You're talking about dense jungle. I mean, how do you get all of this, and you know, you're measuring paces and all that kind of thing, and it's very, very accurate. Wow. He's the mighty Victoria Falls. This one is taken from the Zimbabwe side looking towards Zambia, and I kind of like this picture because I didn't do this on purpose, but I noticed afterwards that this is kind of an outline of the map of Africa if you look at the dark parts. So, what do you know?
What did it mean, discovered?
Mapped it. I mean, obviously people knew that there was something there. Local people would have known. Although not all of them would have gone there because they were afraid of it. But certainly the first ones to map and document it. In 1873, he died in Zambia, and his heart was buried in Zambia, and his body carried back to go back to England. Yeah, they cut his chest out, his heart out, his chest, and buried it in Africa. His two traveling companions, I don't remember his name, can't remember their names now. And they, well, because his heart belonged in Africa, they said. And so they buried his heart there, and they smuggled his body out and sent it back to England. In 2013, we celebrated the 200th birthday of David Livingstone. This is Chief Mukuni number 19 on the left. We're inside of his hut, and to get into his hut, we had to go through a series of things. You walk through this pathway, and then once you get to a certain point, you get down and you have to clap three times, and then you go, and then you have to get down again and you have to clap three times, and eventually you get into his hut, and he's sitting on this, like, this kind of almost like this throne with this leather thing draped over it, and you have these, like, animal, you have these different animal skins in the place and all that kind of thing, and he was sitting there on his iPad. And so we met the Chief Mukuni number 19, very nice guy, very gracious guy. And we heard, sorry? He is quite a nice chief, and he walks around, people know him and love him a lot, and he's very, very rich, because he owns shares in, like, almost anything big that happens in Livingstone. Point in the story is, this is Chief Mukuni number 19. Back when David Livingstone came through, there was Chief Mukuni number 3 or 4, something like that. And when David Livingstone came, the chief heard of this ghost that was walking around. And he heard of this person. He said, oh, you know, this sounds very sketchy. I don't want this person to come into my house. You must come and meet me under this tree. And this is the tree where Chief Mukuni met with David Livingstone, and he realized, oh, this is actually just a person with a different colored skin. David Livingstone's legacy is quite big in Zambia. People really love him there. This is David Livingstone Teachers Training College. I once preached at the David Livingstone Teachers Training College to about 200 students. My text was from Mark chapter 10, where the people bring the children to Jesus, and the disciples rebuke these people, and Jesus is greatly indignant with his disciples. Only time that we read of Jesus being greatly displeased in the whole Bible was here in Mark chapter 10, when the disciples stopped children from coming to Jesus. And I said to the teachers, you know, you're all training to become teachers. What are you going to do one day when someone tries to make you stop children coming from Jesus through what you teach or through your behavior? Because, you know, if you're teaching, say, evolutionary theory, it could stop children from coming to Jesus. There's something in your humanist education, stop children from coming to Jesus. And you have to decide, do you want the wrath of man or do you want the wrath of Christ against you? As I said that, they all started laughing. They thought that was very funny. And Dr. Hammond had to speak after me, and apparently they were just so rowdy the whole time. So that was quite sad. This is just one of David Livingstone's statues that you'll find in Livingstone. There's the David Livingstone Memorial Presbyterian Church. This is where we had one of our conferences. So his legacy is quite great. The first time I went to Zambia was in 2010. It was the first mission I ever did. I was only saved for, you know, just over a year. I was working at Frontline Fellowship for, I think, just under a year. I'd gone through my first GCC, and I went on my first mission in 2010 to the western province of Zambia, a very, very rural area where not even the politicians go, so you must know how bad it is there. The people have obviously no electricity, no running water, they're dressed in rags, just things are very bad for them. And we were going from village to village preaching the gospel. And it was the first time I ever had to speak publicly. I'd been running a Bible study for young men my age for a couple of months, but it was the first time I ever had to preach. And believe me, I hated it. It was terrible. It was awful. And I was preaching and I was speaking through an interpreter, and the people were, nobody was making eye contact with me. And you know, it's really bad when you're preaching to people and they're all just staring at the ground and like, when is this guy going to be finished, you know? And you know, nobody responded to the message afterwards. So it was kind of discouraging for me. But praise the Lord, I was able to persevere with a lot of prompting. This is in just a little city outside of the place that we went. God's blessed investment. You see these kinds of things all over the, you know, all over the place. God's Way Hair Salon. You know, a lot of people using these signs, probably hoping that it'll bring blessing to them. Maybe. This is the mighty Zambezi River in full flood. This was me speaking to a group of men under a mango tree. Now, we were visiting a clinic because we were doing some research in the area. And so I decided to go and speak to these men who were sitting under the mango tree. And this was my interpreter named Gift. Gift was a great guy. He was about 16 years old. But his English wasn't that great. One day we were busy cooking some food, and I asked Gift, are you hungry? And he said, yes. And I said, what would you like to eat? And he said, yes. No, what do you want to eat? Okay. So it was, you know, his understanding of English was very poor. And so I sat next to these guys, and Gift sits next to me to interpret for me, and I suppose, what are you going to do? And as I'm speaking, Gift is interpreting. I mean, he's going for it. No hesitation, no deviation, no repetition. He's going for it. And I'm speaking, and Gift is preaching, and I'm like, Lord, just give him the gift of interpretation, really, because I don't know if he understood what I was saying. And sometimes that's just the reality of what you're facing. Thankfully, he had spent some time with us, and hopefully he understood the gospel well enough so that even if he didn't understand what I was saying, he wouldn't preach heresy. We often show the Jesus film, and when you go to rural areas, the Jesus film is very effective where people don't have electricity or anything, because they don't get anything like that. And this particular night that we were doing this, I don't know what the ceremony was that was going on. The culture is very strange to me in this area, but apparently there was some traditional religious ceremony that was meant to take place that night, but nobody went to it because we were showing the Jesus film and they were all interested in what we were doing. So that was great. A big problem sometimes is when you want to hand out literature and people see you giving out free things. We're stampeded by all these children. I mean, this was one of the guys we were working with from a local church, and he was swamped with all these people. Eventually, I ran away from the car. You can't do anything. People are just all over you. There's hands everywhere, and they're just putting their hands in the box of tracts, and they're just grabbing fistfuls of gospel tracts. You know, now, I mean, it's great that you get to distribute all that literature, but probably people are not going to read it, especially the children. Right. Just another time that we showed the Jesus film, there were about 300 or 400 people that came. This was in the middle of a soccer field. Very effective. Sometimes we do ministry with children. I'm maybe not an expert at children's ministry, but I do enjoy it quite a lot. This particular instance was meant to be a leadership seminar. And you can see none of the church leaders rocked up. It was just a bunch of school children that came. And so I wasn't quite sure what to do, and I was thinking, I had all this stuff prepared to speak to these leaders. I wanted to teach them about repentance and faith and try and help them to understand the gospel better. I thought, you know what, I'm going to do it to these children. I'm going to teach these children repentance and faith in the gospel. And so I did it. And they understood. They understood better than many church leaders. I was shocked and filled with joy at the same time. They understood the gospel, you know, fluently. Or I would say almost perfectly. They understood everything that I was saying. They were taking notes. Children can understand a lot more than what we give them credit for. Really, they can.
I think maybe that's also because they haven't been so deluded by many other ideas.
Absolutely.
They know they have the inherent truth, maybe.
That is true, because a lot of times people just go back to what they know.
Mm.
We found that very often when we go and we teach people, they've been brainwashed by false doctrine, and it's difficult to get them out of that. Very difficult to get them out of that. Biblical Principles for Africa is one of the key textbooks that we use to train and teach people. We teach them about a biblical worldview. We teach them discipleship. We teach them about evangelism. We take them out evangelizing. They go and they share their faith in the marketplaces. And they come back rejoicing, glad. Wow, I could actually share my faith. And people did not even persecute me. This woman was a pastor's wife. She had never shared her faith before. And she was so excited afterwards that she was able to share her faith with someone. It was incredible. And this, let me quickly share. I was talking about the Christian work ethic in this particular seminar. And afterwards, or the day after, I went to a shopping center and I heard this man calling me, John. So I was looking and here comes this guy running towards me who was in the seminar. He said, this is where I work. His job is just to pick up the garbage in the place. He said, this is where I work. And I'm picking up the garbage to the glory of God, just like you taught me. And I'm doing all my work for Jesus.
Wow.
And then it was incredible. And he bought me a watermelon as well, which is nice. This is a man who received some seed from us. And he wanted to take a picture like this. I didn't ask him to do it. Take a picture of me doing this. This was the produce of the seed that we brought in. Hard-working individuals. Yeah, they sowed the seed, and this was the harvest. When David Livingstone came into these areas, there was a lot of slavery, and it grieved him. And a lot of people are unaware of the modern-day slavery that we find in our societies. Although there are only two countries in Africa where abortion is legal, South Africa is one of them. Does anybody know the second? No, it's not legal in Zambia. Tunisia. Only other country where abortion is legal. But Maori Stokes has made its way into Zambia for all your reproductive and family planning services. You get this kind of thing. That's how they get in. Well, this is the controversy. They found out that there were abortions going on and so they wanted to shut them down. But there is still Maori Stokes in Zambia. And they say that they are there just for reproductive purposes, but their goal in life is to do abortions. That's what Maori Stokes herself wanted. She wanted abortion, and she was actually very racist as well. And she would celebrate to see Maori Stokes in Africa. So this is very sad. They are strongly promoting family planning around Zambia, and that's just one step towards abortion. And there are a lot of backstreet abortions that still take place. This man standing outside the window was a madman. He was walking around the bush over there with a log that was lit with fire, so he's sort of walking around with his fire, and we called him over because we wanted to ask for directions, and you know, sometimes difficult to speak to these guys, so we didn't get any direction from him. But this guy over here, he's a pastor. He can't see it that well, but he was terrified of this madman. And in some of these areas, these guys are absolutely terrified of crazy people, because they're terrified of the supposed demons or spirits that are making them mad. You see an incredible fear, either from pastors. Axe, machete, knife.
But you use the tomato knife.
No.
Yeah. And you know that. Yeah. Well, that's a legitimate reason, but I think it's more spiritual in many areas. Of course, a madman with a knife is not someone you want to meet in the middle of the road. This was an old man that we met in the western province of Zambia. You can see him sitting over there with a wheelchair that we brought to him. This is his roof. We brought him a tarpaulin to cover his roof. And there it is over there. We also brought him a mattress, some blankets, some clothes. And he was really, really excited to have it. We didn't know how old he was. We asked him how old he was. Oh, no, I don't know. So he hopped into his house and he got a little crumpled up identification and he asked if we could tell him how old he was because he couldn't read. And so I think he was 80, was around somewhere in his 80s. Very sad that in this place, elderly people are not respected at all. Not at all. The mission leader in this mission gave the responsibility to help this man with his roof to some of the young men in the community, and they didn't at all. In fact, I think they took the tarpaulin away from him. Old women who lose their use in their homes and become a burden to their homes end up getting killed, sometimes burned to death. There's a Brethren mission in the western province of Zambia that has one of its purposes is to protect widows from their family members when they get too old, because they'll kill them. A mission organization wrote to David Livingston asking, "Have you found a good road to where you are? If so, we want to send other men to join you." Livingston replied, "If you have men who will only come if they know there is a good road, I don't want them. I want men who will come even if there is no road at all." Sometimes we have to cross very difficult obstacles and go through tough terrain to get to places where we need to go. Going deeper into the rural areas, this was one of the hospitals that we found that the government had set up in a particular rural area. And it's not a veterinary clinic, it's a hospital. And this was just a chicken that decided that she needed a place to rest. Some of these hospitals, you'll get more sick going in there than anything else. This is a leadership conference that we ran. Remember I told you the story about the man who dragged his wife up to the front of the church and said, you know, this is my wife and I've been doubting if she's the one for me, but I'm repenting. This is where it happened, was at this conference over here. All these people gathered together. He's in the midst of them. He's in there somewhere, him and his wife. Now what I didn't tell you is that he and his wife now have a special ministry to go to other married couples and help them through marital problems. Not only that, but his children were the most rebellious children in school. After he publicly repented, he sat down with his children. He apologized for being the father that he was, and he told them about how he had repented about the way he treated their mother. And there, his children repented to him back about being rebellious children. And now they passed school. Apparently they were both of his sons, top in their class, and they're going on to further studies now as well. Yeah. The pastor, or the bishop, who runs this is a man by the name of Ruben Mwale. Very special man. He attended the Great Commission course in 2006. He went back home after attending the Great Commission course and started farming. He said, "You taught us not to be lazy, but to work hard." And so he farms and teaches his disciples to plant churches and farms at the same time. And they're doing this in rural areas all over Zambia to feed their people physical food as well as spiritual food when they are in need. And this is just a small portion of his land. He just recently started this ponds where he wants to start fish farming. And you know, you don't get this kind of thing in rural Zambia very often. Guys taking incredible initiative like this. And this was just me charging my cell phone in the middle of this farm. Also had some sugar cane, very nice sugar cane. A while ago, this is Bishop Ruben Mwale. I've been working with him for about 7 years now. Keep going back there, so we've got a good relationship. We once took a picture of the group that we had done ministry with outside of his church, and this was his church sign. The previous bookshop manager of CLB saw the church sign and he said, I want to make this man a new church sign. And so he designed it himself. He got it made up and everything. And so we took this sign across Botswana into Zambia and delivered it to him. And there was incredible rejoicing in his church when they received this new sign. Oh, they were so full of joy when they got this new church sign, which was nice, it was metal, and lots of singing and dancing when we presented it to them. And here it is when they erected it. New Hope in Christ Tabernacle, part of Reconciliation Ministries International. This is his church. It's really just a big tent that is held up by a bunch of sticks, and we hold biblical worldview seminars even in the bush in Zambia. These are some of the people who participated. We also make them do the Bible exam too. You can see those who have certificates are the ones who pass the Bible exam. So we have the same standards when we go out there. And sadly, some of the pastors fail the Bible exam. Many Bible college students fail the Bible exam. So if you pass, you know, I know a lot of churches that you could go and help. You know, more than the pastor knows. That's the reality. I don't know what I was showing the size of something. These are the women who cook for us when we have our conference. The women work very, very hard, and it means so much to them when we go and we thank them and spend time with them and minister to them and pray for them, and they have a lot of fun when you just go and you sit with them and start stirring the pot. They think it's very, very funny when you come and try and help them. This is some of the places that we sleep. This is inside one of the storerooms. We sleep in a lot of strange places. This is not bad. This is just mattresses on the ground. Sometimes they'll put you in a storage room next to the grain and things like that. Sometimes they'll put you in a place where there's rats. And that's not nice, because then they're crawling on you while you're sleeping. I don't know if you can imagine sleeping and all of a sudden you've got these claws digging into your back. You wake up and next thing the rat scurries off. And they steal your malaria tablets, they eat them, they use tea bags, they're desperate. So it makes for some difficult sleeping when you have rats. We run missions conferences in these rural parts of Zambia as well. One of the big burdens that I had a while ago was the lack of biblical preaching happening in many churches. And so we took up the initiative to start a biblical preaching handbook. I co-authored it with Hunter Combs. It's the son-in-law of Peter Hammond and David Prue, who was a missionary with us. And these were some of the first people to receive the biblical preaching handbook. These are all men who were my interpreters. And so they've been interpreting for me for many years, and they now have received their own biblical preaching handbook. Books putting feet to your faith, they make it very far out of the shelves that you see over here. Of course, there's always the children who are happy to take selfies, and also teaching them about the Christian work ethic. Sometimes travel is strange and difficult. This is one of the missionary apprentices. He just finished his apprenticeship last year. His name is Joseph. And this was the first mission that he ever went on. And he didn't do too bad. I put him in the back of this vehicle that he had to share with some chickens. I don't know how many of you know who Conrad Mbewe is. Conrad Mbewe is a Zambian. I've actually gone to his church, and I've met him, and I've listened to him preach. Very, very good preacher. He's in Lusaka in Zambia. And he's spoken out very strongly against the prosperity movement in churches around Zambia. This is a man from Zimbabwe called Magaya, Prophet Magaya. Remember I told you about him? He's the one who does the brick miracle. You donate bricks to him and you'll get a house, supposedly. He also is very physical in his deliverance. He will actually hit people while he does deliverance. And the name of his ministry is called PhD, Prophetic Healing and Deliverance. PhD ministry. So that's him. And he's big in Zambia. And this kind of movement is growing very rapidly in Zambia. We've had Christian Action workshops in Zambia as well, calling people to apply the Lordship of Christ to every area of life. Last year was Reformation 500, and we went to Zambia to have a Reformation 500 fire conference. And it was one of the highlights of our big mission overland last year. I took my wife with me, and Francis went with me as well. And Jackson was with us, although he was not yet born. He was still in his mother's womb over here. We taught them, of course, about the five solas. Lots of conversations, especially about discernment issues. People are very interested in seeking the truth and preaching the truth as well. And I would say it was very effective, and more people are asking us to talk about discernment-related issues around Africa. These are some of the men who have been interpreters for me as well. And this is a tent that we donated to one of the churches of Bishop Ruben Mwale. And now over here it was up and running, but over the years it has got some mold on it. And in this particular instance, I started preaching, and people started gathering together, and it started raining, and all the moldy spots just started to leak. The rain was so loud and so heavy that people couldn't hear what I was saying, and so I had to preach very loud. Now, I can have a loud voice at times when I want to, and so I was preaching loud. I mean, I was using my preaching voice, and they couldn't hear me. But thankfully, because of the drops of rain, they all had to sort of huddle around and get really close to each other, just in a very small compact circle where the rain couldn't get to them. And so I could eventually almost stand right on top of them and preach right at them so that they could hear me. So I kind of felt like I was shouting at them, but you know, you have to do what you have to do. Some of the sleeping arrangements are tough. Now, this strange looking object over here is my arm. I don't know if you can tell, but it's got these little pink things all over it. Those are bed bug bites. Oh man, bed bugs are the worst. Give me rats any day over bed bugs. My whole body was covered in bed bug bites. Head to toe, on my face, on my head, down my neck, in my back, everywhere. And that day I had to preach the whole day. I had a conference to preach the whole day. And while I'm preaching, I mean, you know, it's a throbbing itch. Like, you need to scratch it when you've got a bed bug bite. And I'm preaching, and I mean, I'm scratching the whole time while I'm busy speaking to these people. I mean, that's distracting. If I have to speak to you and I'm like doing this the whole time, you know, you're going to wonder if I bath. And so I'm like, it was very, very difficult to preach like that.
So you woke up there then?
That's how I woke up, it's from this bed.
Yeah.
Yes.
I had lots of bed bugs when I went to stand with a big one time. And the way you kill them is you just take the matches and put them in the sun for the day.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the sad thing is that you have to first find out that they are bed bugs. You know? it was only the one night, so I don't have too much to complain about. This is just one of the conferences that we had, again doing discipleship training with different churches that are already established. Jesus Film equipment, you might recognize some of this. Mm-hmm. Alright, here we show the Jesus Film in this little church over here. Now, I've had it in the Jesus Film where I've showed the Jesus Film, got up to preach afterwards, and as I get up to preach, people walk away. You know, they come for the entertainment, leave before the conviction. they've come, they've watched the film, the man's going to preach, now we can go home. This particular instance, as the film was finishing, it started to rain very heavily. The people had to stay. And then I got to preach to all of them, and there was, you know, I can't judge if people are saved or not, but I said to them, you know, you need to turn from your sins and call upon the Lord Jesus and trust in Him to save you. And they just started praying, like right there, just spontaneous. They were just praying and calling out, and there was loud cries, and you know, I can't tell whether or not they were genuine or not, but I hope and pray that many of them were. The children from my home church, their Sunday school, the Sunday school took up collections once a week to buy a bicycle for Reuben Marley, because he has no mode of transport of his own. And so the kids from my church bought this man a bicycle, so it was a great blessing for him and for them as well. During his studies, David Livingstone wrote to his sisters, urging them to seek to be uncommon Christians. That is, eminently holy and devoted servants of the Most High. Let us seek, and with the conviction that we cannot do without it, that selfishness be extirpated, pride banished, unbelief driven from the mind, every idol dethroned, and everything hostile to holiness and opposed to the divine will crucified, that holiness to the Lord may be engraved on the heart and evermore characterize our whole conduct. To those who said that the work at home must be completed thoroughly before any missions can be engaged abroad, Livingstone responded, "All men have the right to hear God's word. No nation ought to hoard the gospel like a miser." Very brief overview of ministry done in Zambia. Does anybody have any questions or comments until this point?
You mentioned briefly, Comrade and Billy, how much do you know about him? Or, I've heard it quite a bit from him. Not really, I guess, but I've heard of him from the States. I've heard his, you know, some people have mentioned him, calling him even like Spurgeon of Africa, kind of things like that. Or is he, then, what do you see of him?
Well, Spurgeon of Africa. That's an American thing that's happened. They've asked him about that, and he said, "I don't call myself that." He said, "Only the Americans call me that, and I don't think I'm worthy to be called that." So that was his response to it. It's not something that he called himself. He's a fantastic preacher. Go and listen to him. Great expositor, and very, very good preacher in the African context. Just really incredible. Just go listen to him. But listen to his sermons that he preaches in his church. Don't listen to the stuff that he says in the conference. It's very good stuff that he says in the conferences, but if you want to hear good exposition in the African context, listen to Conrad and Mbewe. Very, very good. Yeah. Okay. Time is running away, but I will quickly do an overview of Egypt. I won't take too long because I can't really say too much. I'll start with this. In 2016, I was asked to go to Egypt. There was a man who wanted to set us up with a big church in Egypt. I didn't really know much about it. At the same time, there was another church that had reached out to us also in Egypt that wanted some ministry and wanted some different things done. And so I flew out to meet them. When I met them, I met some of the most sincere and happiest people I've ever met in my whole life. This man over here who was interpreting for me, I'll call his name Adam just for the sake of this presentation. Adam was a refugee in Egypt. The place that he came from is a Muslim country, and he converted to Christianity. He was a school teacher, and when he converted, he he started to use Bible stories in his classes during school. And the wrong people found out about this and started to hunt him down. At the same time, his wife and his wife's family found out about his faith. And his wife's family was part of a radical sect of Islam and took his wife away from him as well as all of his children. He had to run away from everyone and everything that he knew, and he had to change his name. This is him about 7 years down the line. I had spoken that day about the sovereignty of God, not knowing what this man had gone through. When I was done with my presentation on the sovereignty of God, he came up to me. He said to me, "You know what you said is true. All things work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to His purposes." He shared his testimony with me about how he lost his life, his job, his wife, his children, and everything he held precious to him. He said, "But today I get to be with you and with many other Christians, and we can share our faith with each other and read the Word together." He said, "I would never have been able to do this in the past. God has used all things together for my good." The kind of faith it takes to say that, I think, is something that comes from God. That is just one story amongst many. All of the believers in this little underground church have very similar testimonies. Another man, his brother tried to kill him by strangling him. And before he passed out, his brother just broke down because he realized, "I'm trying to kill my own brother here." And his brother was converted through that. Many people kicked out of their families, ostracized by their own communities. And they are now living as refugees in Egypt, in underground churches. We have the opportunity and privilege to help disciple and train these men and women. In Egypt, this is in Cairo, you see these satellites all over the place, all over the rooftops. Everywhere you look, just satellites, satellites, satellites. Now you think, people watch a lot of TV. Well, that's probably true. But the fantastic thing is the amount of Christian ministry that gets done through satellite TV. Through Sat7 and many other ministries, people are coming to Christ through satellite TV. This is just a bit of what Cairo looks like. Basically, the whole of Cairo looks like this. It's just big brown buildings everywhere. A lot of religion in Egypt, both from Christianity and Islam. Obviously, Christianity has been around in Egypt for much longer than Islam.
Does that say mosque?
Yes. Yes, that is. Obviously, Christianity has been around for much longer than Islam. I think around the late 8th century, Egypt was Islamized and Arabic was made the official language. I did get a chance to go and see the Great Pyramids. This was my tour guide and his wife. They couldn't speak a word of English, which made it quite strange and awkward. And this is the camel that I got to ride. He was a very stubborn camel. He didn't even want me to take a picture of him. He had very strange facial expressions every time I sat in him. And let me tell you something, a camel ride is not as glorious and glamorous as what you might think. It's terrible. I never want to ride another camel again. It's a horrible thing to ride a camel. They're nice creatures, you know, and they've got a bit of personality, but it is really uncomfortable. It is incredibly uncomfortable. So these are just some of the pyramids in Egypt. The camel was quite smug at this stage because our journey had ended. He was a good boy. So Coptic is just another word for Egyptian. So the Egyptian Orthodox Church is the oldest tradition church in Egypt. They trace their roots back apparently to Mark, who wrote the Gospel of Mark, who came and started the church in Egypt, and that's where the Coptic Church traces its lineage right back down to. It's very sort of almost looks Catholic. They're into their their pictures and their icons and their relics, and apparently there was, this is where some cloak that was worn from the Lord's Supper was buried over there. But they've got these big beautiful churches. The Copts and the Catholics have churches. Of course, Jesus did go to Egypt when he was a little boy, so they have these different sites, these pilgrimage sites that you can go and visit all over the place. Now, this was the main reason that I actually went to Egypt, to go and minister in this church. I didn't know it at the time, but this is the biggest church in the Middle East. 7,000 members plus. They've got a ministry that reaches millions of people every single service through their radio and satellite broadcasting. I just went to go and meet up with them to see how we can collaborate doing mission work together. I didn't know how big they were. So I went there, and they've got, you can see they're busy recording things, and they have to often make space for new people to come into the church. The members have to leave so that other people can come in. I was sitting at the back of the church, and I had headphones in, because as the pastor was preaching in Arabic, they had interpreters interpreting into about three different languages, and English was one of them. I went to this church on a Sunday morning for the church service. I wasn't asked to do anything or say anything. I was just going to go there and see how they did church. I went to the pastor before the service started, and I was dressed up. I was dressed in my suit. And as we're busy sitting before the service starts, somebody runs into the room and whispers into the pastor's ear. And he says to me, "The man who was meant to preach this morning is stuck in his house because his elevator is not working. But you're wearing a suit, so you can just preach this morning." And so I had to preach on the spot. But it was a great privilege. I got to preach in the largest church in the Middle East without even thinking that I was going to do that. This
That's
is just
a very important point for people to understand.
Right. This is just a bit of the church. This is it from the outside. The reason why they are able to grow so big in this Muslim-dominated area is because during the revolution, they were setting up these pop-up clinics all over the place, and they were very closely associated with the revolution. So the current leadership, the government, if you can call it that, people who are running the country, really like this church a lot because they think the church is on their side, politically speaking. They say, "We're not really, we're helping the people, but they allow us to keep on running, then that's fine." And that's why they can have such a big ministry and preach the gospel to millions of people multiple times a week. They've got a huge ministry there, and God is really blessing them. There are 10% of the population is meant to be Christian in Egypt. So that's about a 90% Islamic country. There is incredible persecution there, incredible opposition. But the believers, by and large, are standing strong. It's so convicting to go to a church where people are persecuted for their faith, where they've lost families and loved ones, lost their jobs, and everything that they hold dear to them, and they are still serving the Lord fervently and faithfully. That's why things like the prosperity gospel can't flourish in places like this, because it just cannot work.
Exactly.
Doesn't it? You cannot sell Joel Osteen's book, Your Best Life Now, to these people. Okay, I mean, they might be humble and gracious and you know, because they believe in the sovereignty of God, cope with things, but the content of his book just will not fly in these areas because he doesn't have a theology of suffering. You need to have a theology of suffering if you are going to live and survive in these areas. I'd like us to pray for the church in Egypt, especially the underground churches. There are a lot of people who are working with refugees in Egypt, because although it's a Muslim country, they do have an element of religious freedom from the government. You can still practice Christianity, you can preach the truth, you can preach the gospel, provided it's in a church environment. There are a lot of people who are going to Egypt now working as teachers, teaching English, and they are using it as an opportunity to share the gospel. One of the biggest dangers to the church in Egypt is secularism, and it's also one of the biggest threats to Islam. A lot of the young people in Egypt are dissatisfied with Islam. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they are coming to Christ. It just means they are becoming secular. And so now, the church really needs to have a loud voice and speak to the youth in Egypt. And that's one of the things that Kafr al-Zubara, which is the largest church in the Middle East, is doing. They've got a huge youth ministry. They've got, how much, I think they said about 1,000 youth that come to their church on a Friday night. That's big. And in Egypt, I mean, if that happened in any church here, that would be impressive. That would be very impressive, right? In Egypt, you know that place where they're chopping people's heads off? That's where this is happening. And a lot of these people are coming from Muslim backgrounds. And so the church leadership also needs a lot of prayer to know what to do with these individuals, because that's their biggest problem. I foolishly asked the pastor, you know, what is the biggest problem that you face? He looked at me like I was stupid. He says, Islamic faith. You know, oh, yeah, right. Obviously. but, you know, I was just trying to draw some information out of him. And a big problem is knowing what to do with these converts who come to Christ. So please pray for them. Pray for the leadership. Pray for wisdom and guidance. Does anybody have any questions about Egypt, Zambia, Zimbabwe? Try to fit all of these into one slot. Anything that's unfair? They speak Arabic. Yeah. So everybody there speaks Arabic.
What is the original?
Coptic. Yeah. Which very, very few know. I don't quite know if there are any people who teach it. I know the Coptic church still has it in their tradition. They use the Coptic language, but they don't use it in speaking to each other or anything like that. Sorry?
The Bibles in Arabic?
Yes. Yeah, everything is Arabic there. Any other questions?
I just want to know about Stack 7 and how important it is. I don't know if you know
that. Yeah, so Stack 7 is one of the satellite broadcasting networks. They minister all over the Arab speaking world, particularly in the Middle East. And this church, Kafr al-Zubara, has a number of regular slots on Sat 7 as well that their messages get broadcast onto, and really thousands of people come to Christ through watching the Christian ministry program. So I think in the West Christian television is weak and shallow and superficial, but in the Middle East it's quite effective and it's being used very powerfully, and Benny Hinn is not on Sat 7.
Perhaps encourage folks to Google Easter flash mob Beirut, just Google Easter flash mob Beirut, and you'll see a Sat 7 broadcast. So if you're in a busy shopping mall in Beirut, Lebanon, and somebody stands up and starts singing in Arabic, which you've got the English subtitles, and you sing about the resurrection Christ, and see somebody else cover, and see a whole choir all around coming out of woodworks and different parts of the shopping centre, and the local people, some people join in, it doesn't look like everyone was part of it, and they sing about Jesus risen from the dead, death is defeated, death shattered the grave, and Satan and Hades and ascended on high, and says, Lord my God, this is in Arabic in a Muslim shopping centre, and here's this church business, and local people seem to respond well. It's full from different places, edited together, such a broadcast. I mean, that's just like brilliant. They've got so many things like this. Saxon is cutting edge. We can't compare it with the dribble we get in the name of just two universities. It's really powerful. And bubbles and friends. Well, as John showed you, every man is God's word. Is that not official?
Yeah.
About 25 years ago, I was sitting on the Dulos ship outside Port Elizabeth, permission to mobilize an effort without conflicts, with high-powered characters like George Mervyn around. And we were talking how to reach a Muslim, but East was a highly secret meeting. And somebody came up with a Stack 7. And I was probably the first to speak after Lady Sassable. How many people in the Middle East have access to satellite dishes? At that stage, about 25 years ago, 50 million. At 50 million, he said, look, I'm telling you the Bedouins have satellite dishes and their camels. And he said, yes, actually they do. And I mean, by now, it's got to be way past the 50 million. Yeah. Who knows what it's now? They've now opened up this Parsi, which is called Iran and Turkish. So they're broadcasting, they've several channels now. They've got a children's channel. I don't have much time just for TV in the West, but in the Middle East, it's the one way you can reach a lot of people in the West.
Yeah. And what's even, what's made that even greater now is the internet. Because it's not just going out on the satellites, it's being live streamed. And through their live stream, just Qasr al-Dabar's live stream, they get 2 million hits for every live stream service that they run. That is a lot. That's around the Arab speaking world, yeah.
2
million hits.
There are lots of secret Christians in the Muslim world, and this is what this needs to be helping. There's a person who's a prisoner in Oman, and he meets some Muslim woman in the middle of Iran. What can she do? Well, this is the one link she's got for. And they say, I've forgotten the stats, but it's in the hundreds of thousands of correspondents that they're handling, and they give them money. And so that's a, you know, request for Bibles, Bible studies, online house and this and other. Okay. So Sac 7 is extraordinary, and we mustn't give up on the Middle East.
Yeah.
There's something amazing there.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's, I don't know if you found out, you know, how do they view themselves when they see their country, the Bible being always on the wrong side of God?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't ask them that, but I found it very awkward sometimes because you don't realize how much you speak about Egypt until you're in Egypt. And, you know, as you're speaking, you talk about the Israelites coming up out of Egypt, and you know, you sort of, you don't want to mention it. I don't know, it is very sort of awkward subject, and you know, you also don't want to make too many jokes about it because probably everybody does it, you know, like, yes, we've heard that one before, and you know, come out of Egypt, yes, very funny, you know, Jesus came into Egypt.